You are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Giants podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Patricia Trina, and I cover your New York Giants for a variety of different outlets, including The Athletic, Forbes, Inside Football, and others. You can check out my written work by following me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina, T-R-A-I-N-A. As we wait for the Giants' Monday night kickoff against the San Francisco 49ers, I thought we'd do something a little different for today's show. Today's show is going to feature a scouting report on new offensive lineman Jamon Brown, who the Giants were awarded off waivers from the Rams last week. Brad Mader, host of the Locked On Rams podcast, came on and provided a really in-depth scouting report covering everything you could possibly want to know about the newest Giant. So that interview will be up first on today's program. Then in segments 2 and 3, we're going to hear from a good friend of mine, Chris Raggi. For those of you who don't know who that is, Chris is a veteran journalist who currently is one of the anchors of CBS 2 New York's Morning News program. He's also a former college quarterback, having once played for the University of New Hampshire. And he also covered the Giants many years ago, back when Eli Manning was just getting his NFL career off the ground. Chris is, he's really a great guy, one of the most genuine people you're ever going to want to meet. And it was really interesting for me to hear his takes on the state of the Giants. So I hope you will enjoy that interview. I think Chris had some really good takes on the state of the Giants, dipped into the history a little bit, and expectations for the future. So always good to get a different voice on the program once in a while. All right, Giant fans, so let's jump right into our first segment, that again being the scouting report of offensive lineman Jamon Brown, courtesy of Brad Mader. I am now joined by Brad Bear Mader. I hope I said that right, the host of the Locked On Rams podcast. And one of the things that I wanted to moving forward with this podcast is every time the Giants pick up a new player, be it on waivers, be it via trade, free agency or whatnot, I want to go right to the source. And really, there's no better source than the Locked On podcast host. They really know their teams inside and out. And just, you know, ask those people about these new acquisitions. And of course, the Giants last week were awarded Jamon Brown, offensive lineman off waivers. And Bear, what can you tell us about Jamon Brown?
Yeah, first off, thanks for having me on. I love doing these crossovers, talking with other hosts on the network, so thank you. Jamon Brown is an awesome player, and he's one that we're actually really sad to see go. I know we had to make move. We actually had a corresponding move when we went and traded for Deontay Fowler Jr., who got his first action this week down in New Orleans. But we had to make some roster moves to get him onto our team, and then we also had to look at the money, and I think those are the two things that ended up being, a casualty for Jamon Brown on our team was, you know, he had a couple million dollars on his contract that was against our salary cap that if we moved him, we could create some space for Fowler joining the team. And then he was suspended earlier in the season, 2 games for a marijuana use that happened 18 months ago, which is crazy that that is now coming into effect. But it put him on the bench and it allowed Austin Blythe, guard for the Rams, an opportunity to fill in for those 2 games. And what happened in those 2 games? Austin Blythe played his lights out. Austin Blythe played his mind out in those 2 games and really, really solidified him as the starter. And Jamon Brown was kind of in the waiting. So we miss him out here already in LA. You guys got yourself a heck of a player. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do. I would not be surprised if he's in the starting role very, very soon.
Yeah, young player. He's still on his rookie contract. What type of player, though, is he? Is he a mauler? Is he a finesse guy, a technician? How would you describe him?
Yeah, you're right. 1 year left. I think that was another reason why this move was made. They looked at him basically, are we going to re-sign him next year? Is he going to be in the long-term picture for the Rams? I think that was another reason why they moved on from him. But what you're getting in Jamon Brown is a great pass blocker. He does well in the run as well, but that is not his strong suit. Pass blocking was in 2018. At one point, he was the number one pass blocking efficiency among guards with 99.4. That comes from Pro Football Focus. He finished the season on a tear. He didn't allow a single pressure on Jared Goff over those last 6 or 7 weeks, and really got to come in line with the rest of that offensive line, as we had every single starter play every single game last year. We were really excited about him coming in, but you're going to get a guy that's great at pass protection, and looking at the Giants, they really need that. So like I said, it wouldn't be surprised if he's in there sooner than later. And then run blocking, something that he does well, but you know, definitely pass blocking is would be his strength.
Now, is he primarily a guard, or can he also play tackle?
You know, that's another thing, and I'd love to see what the Giants do with them. We had a time not too long ago, it was actually Jared Goff's first year, and we were still in the Jeff Fisher era, so all you Ram fans, cover your ears when I say that coach's name. We don't like that around here, but we had a lot of move him here, move him there, and he's able to play multiple positions. I think he's naturally a guard on the right side, but we've seen him on as playing a guard on the left. We've seen him fill in at tackle. I think the only thing he doesn't do and would probably be really awkward at would be center. That's something unique. But yeah, I think depending on where you need him, guard would probably be his first preference on the right side. But this is a guy a couple years ago that we were trying everything on that offensive line. We were shaking people up. We had a bunch of injuries, and he got moved around quite a bit. So he's got a few games left to prove his worth, and this could be a great home. As we mentioned, the Giants don't have the best offensive line. We all know that. They've struggled at times. Eli's trying to get the ball out, but he's on his back a lot, or running to try to get a pass out. He will help there, and it could be someone that, you know, moving forward would really be a good pickup in a long-term play.
Now, you know, you got a chance to see Jamon Brown play a little bit. Obviously, he's still young, still developing as a player. What do you think his upside is?
You know, I think he's a bona fide starter in this league for a long time. I think really what we were hoping out here was he was going to be part of what we were doing. You know, we've been extending people out here. We've been trading, making moves, been adding. We added Andrew Whitworth, who, you know, has really solidified our line. We got John Sullivan at the center position. And we looked over to Jamon Brown going, man, we got another young guy that, you know, potentially we will sign long term. Instead, that was Rob Havenstein that we gave the big extension to this offseason. This whole trouble with, you know, the suspension, I think it kind of was a part of why he didn't get extended. I mean, again, this guy's a good guy. You know, you hear suspensions from the NFL and you're, oh man, these guys are punks and troublemaker, and you got to watch out for him, and he's going to be a liability in the future. That is not the case with this guy. I think he's learned from it. It was 18 months ago. He's not getting in trouble consistently. He's a great, great person in the community. The things that he did out here in LA in the community were amazing. If you go to his Twitter page already, he has it as his foundation up there. I mean, he's not about him first. He's a very team forward guy. So you guys are getting a great player in that sense. And I think he's going to do great things in the New York community. So I think you're getting a guy that can really fit into this team long term. Again, looking at that line, you need some help. This guy is a guy that can help you. I'll be curious to see what kind of a contract he gets in the offseason. I think he'll probably get a 1 or 2 year prove it deal before someone really wants to invest long term in him. But I think he could find a home in New York.
Is there anybody in particular that his game reminds you of that, you know, maybe the Giant fans would recognize the name? Like, I know somebody said to me that he's almost like a younger version of a DJ Fluker. But, you know, having seen him, is there someone that he reminds you of?
It's funny you say that, because that was kind of the first name that was popping in my head. And me and you might have read the same article, but not really other than that. I mean, that Giants fans would be familiar with. He actually plays very similar to Austin Blythe, who replaced him. And that's what's really funny in the situation out here when you're watching him. I think Austin Blythe is a better run blocker, and I think that's probably what gives him an advantage. And he started out the season so hot. So it goes back to that NFL where if you give an opportunity to somebody else to take your job, whether that's via injury or suspension, you may not get your job back. This was a perfect example for Jamon, but again, a great player coming over, and it was really hard for the Rams to make this move. I'm sure they looked at tons of other things to do as far as other than releasing him. I know at this point they knew that they were going to release him, so they tried to shop him and get something back. But most people in the NFL started to pick that up. They're going, okay, they're shopping for low-end, you know, draft picks here. They're going to have to release him. So everyone kind of called the bluff on the Rams, and the Giants just happened to be up there, you know, high on the waiver wire to be able to pick him up first. But again, great steal for you guys. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, potentially in the free agent market, which he's going to hit soon, is going to have a high demand. So for them to be able to, one, get kind of the rental for the rest of the year, and then also to put in that work to say, hey, maybe this is a place you want to be long term. You know, you got a great young running back. You got a wide receiver signed for a long time. If you figure out that quarterback position, and maybe that comes from filling in that offensive line, this could be a place that he would want to stay long term as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting because the Giants signed Nate Solder to a multi-year deal. He's not going anywhere because of the cap hit. They drafted a nice young guard in Will Hernandez on the left side, and now it just sounds like, you know, adding Jamon Brown may be the answer on the right side at right guard. We'll see, you know, how he takes to the offense over here. And then really it's just a matter of what the Giants end up doing at, you know, center, if they bring back John Jalapio, and what they do at right tackle, if they're going to, you know, stick with Chad Wheeler or go with Brian Mihalik. So it just sounds, you know, based on what you're telling me, it sounds like the Giants might have gotten a jump start on rebuilding that offensive line already.
Yeah, you nailed it. And it's funny because you name off the first couple of those names, obviously Solder, he hasn't panned out yet, gave a bunch of money to him. But if you can correct that and make him the player that you guys thought you were signing, you know, when he came over from the Patriots, and obviously another young draft pick that you've put into the offensive line, and you're not too far away from this thing really working out. Some pieces have to fall right, and you have to really develop some of those young talent. But Jamon Brown can be one of those guys that comes in from a team, even though he didn't play at all this year. You know, he was a part of a team that went to the playoffs last year under Sean McVay and really built this success, this drive, this passion, this understanding of what it's like to be with a winning football team. Bring him in now. Obviously, the Rams just had their first loss over the weekend, but coming in from a team where expectations and accountability is really high, so that's kind of what's driven into him. Maybe coming in, this might be a great piece for some of those young players, maybe even some of those players that, you know, aren't performing up to par yet, to really kind of be a leader. I know that he was one of those guys that was leaning that way as far as leadership and someone you could count on. So again, another great piece for that offensive line that desperately needs it right now.
And then final question for me, the Rams have a very good offensive line. Obviously you can trace that back to the coaching as well as the talent. So what do you think that Jamon has picked up from the coaching that maybe will transfer over to the Giants in terms of, be it technique or, you know, his study habits or whatever, you know, intangible you can think of?
Yeah, I think there's a lot, right? It starts with that we, not me. It's a big Sean McVayism out here in Los Angeles, and it's the team first. It's that accountability. It's, you know, doing that extra rep. It's, you know, wanting to be great. And I think that's what he's going to bring out. Aaron Cromer is the offensive line coach. He's amazing out here. So a lot goes to him with, you know, technique and through the practice and everything like that. But those are things that he's been involved with for the past 2 years and really is embedded as him as an offensive lineman. So you got to hope that he can bring something that he's learned with him to, you know, either whether it's just being a good teammate and being able to provide that in himself every day, or even trying to share that in a leadership role and mentor some of these younger guys. I know he's been only in the league, like you said, he's still in his rookie contract, but when you're around some of these great leaders that the Rams do have, and Andrew Whitworth and Sullivan, some of these longtime veterans in the NFL, you're picking up stuff daily. So hopefully that's something that he can bring to you guys, because again, that offensive line, if you fix that, you know, you got some great pieces on that offense. And, you know, for the Giants fans' sake, I mean, I'm rooting that you guys get to re-sign him and that all things work out, because he was a player when he was released, you should have seen Rams Twitter wire was going crazy as far as like, what, we released Jamon Brown? Like, there goes our depth. We really loved having him as a safety net. If anyone got hurt, we're like, boom, we've got a legitimate starter to plug in. That no longer is here. And it now sits in New York. So you guys are definitely trending up as far as offensive line help goes.
Well, that's very reassuring. And Brett, I appreciate your input. Tell the folks where they can find your work besides obviously Locked On Rams.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Locked On Rams. You can find my personal at LA_RamblingBear. And yeah, reach out. I always love interacting with other teams and fan bases and answering questions. And, you know, you're doing a great job over there at Locked On Giants. So keep it up. Hopefully your guys' record helps you out a little bit. And, you know, one of these days we'll do a crossover. Maybe in the off season we'll talk about the upcoming 2019 season.
You got it for sure. That's Brad Bairmater. Thank you so much, and great talking to you as always.
All right. Thank you.
The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, follow Locked On NFL Net to get all the latest breaking news and game highlights from the Locked On Podcast Network NFL hosts, all on one convenient feed. On Instagram, Locked On NFL Net gives you the biggest stories, including audio cuts as provided by the various Locked On NFL team hosts. Make sure you follow Locked On NFL Net on both Twitter and Instagram to get your daily fill of the NFL.
I'm joined now by Chris Raggi. And for those of you who don't know who Chris is, besides being one of the world's biggest Giants fans, he is currently an anchor on CBS News, used to be an anchor on The Early Show. I believe he also worked on NBC Sports as a reporter. And I'm sure I'm missing something else. You have such a long list of places you've been.
I can't believe it's been 25 years, over 25 years in this business already. And I'll tell you, you know what? A couple of those years were as basically as a TV beat reporter for the Giants for a few years back when I first came back to New York in 2004. So it was, you know, Eli's rookie year for a couple of years there before I made the move to news. So it it's germane to what we're about to talk about, but it's been great. I'll tell you, it's been a really great run so far, and I'm hoping it doesn't end anytime soon.
Well, congratulations. You're one of the Giants' celebrity fans.
You use that word that term very loosely, but I appreciate that. But it's, you know, it's been the fabric of my life. My family and I, we were all born and raised in Rutherford, and literally I grew up in the shadow of Giant Stadium, and have been going there since 1976 when Giant Stadium opened up. We've been season ticket holders ever since, and I'm a season ticket holder at the new place, and it's just been a huge, huge part of my life. It was what my dad and I did every Sunday. We used to take road trips, and obviously we'd be at all the home games, and it was just my boyhood idol was Phil Sims, and living in Northern Jersey, I got a chance to know a lot of the players growing up, and it's just been it's been great. It's a little rough last year and this year, but other than that, it's really been a great ride.
I was going to say, we all need a big group hug given the way the last 2 years have gone. So yeah. Let's talk a little bit about it, you know, because one of the things I like to do is I like to get different perspectives because, you know, I talk to fellow media members all the time.
Yeah.
And we all have the same opinions and we all say the same things for the most part. So it's always nice to get, you know, not that you're an outsider per se, but a different perspective, you know, from you know, somebody who follows the team, but maybe has a different, you know, way of looking at things.
I think we all see the same thing. And I think if you have, I look at it this way, having grown up around the game, having grown up around the Giants, having played, you know, at the collegiate level and having friends who are coaches, not only with the Giants, but at various systems, professional and collegiate, you know, all around the country, you know, I think we look at it probably in a similar fashion in that, I think the public, I mean, if you read the papers now or whatever blog you follow or whatever TV person you follow, the easy target is, you know, is Eli. And I get that. I think a lot of us, present company included, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we see that the problem runs a little deeper in that Eli has not been protected and supported from an offensive line standpoint in the last couple of years. And I think it's finally you know, last year we thought it was bad. Well, I don't think any of us thought it could get worse this year, but, you know, you hate to point the finger at one thing. I personally see the offensive line as the huge, huge problem with this program and with this team. And until it's addressed and until it's really fixed on the wholesale level, I mean, I think you have to look at every position. I know we're locked up with Nate on the left side now, and you know, and Will Hernandez has been a nice addition, but I think from the middle all the way to that right side, you've got to readdress, you know, three positions on that offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, for years I've been questioning whether this offensive line has been a good marriage for Eli, and that by that, I mean, you go back and you look at the great offensive line of 2007 through 2010, and they had more maulers on that line. And I think, you know, that was a big reason why, you know, Eli was able to drop back, sit in the pocket, be that sitting duck that he still is today, and find receivers and make do with what he had. And well, now you have a bunch of guys who are finesse guys who just, you know, they can't hold their blocks long. So now it necessitates getting the ball out of Eli's hand quickly. And it's just, you know, you're not going to see those big explosive plays anymore.
You know, it's funny, too, and a lot of people, if you listen to the Monday night game, and you're listening to broadcasters that you can tell don't sit and follow the team, you know, throughout the week and throughout the season, because, you know, they're talking about, well, you know, Eli's not the leader that they need and this and that. And, you know, you think back at those offensive lines that you're talking about, you know, the Snead, the O'Haras, you know, the David Deals, those guys, Kareem McKenzie, those guys were mashers, okay? They were big, solid, tough guys. They could be the leader. Anybody stepped out of line, they were the guys that could step up and put people in their place. God forbid somebody touch Eli on the field, these guys are going to be the first to get on you and get in your face. The Giants don't have that. You know what I mean? Everybody, I think it's a very lazy excuse to be like, well, you know what? They don't have a mobile quarterback. He can't extend play. Eli has not extended, with the exception of the catch. Okay. Count how many real plays Eli has extended with his feet throughout the last 15 years of his career. We've known that's not his thing. But at the same time, there's got to be some semblance of a pocket. I mean, this guy cannot get into a five-step drop, let alone a seven, or even at times a three-step drop. It's so, you know, I know the amateur viewer in this kind of pinball day and age of NFL offense is, you know, again, quick to blame the quarterback of missing a read or not getting ready. This fallacy of like, oh, he should have thrown the ball away. How do you throw the ball away when you have 2.2 seconds to actually, before contact is made, from the time the ball is snapped till it hits your hand? I mean, some of it I just don't get. And I look at it, I'm not saying I'm looking at it through rose-colored glasses or anything. I think we're all watching the same game. But I think there is blame to go around. There is all sorts of blame that can be placed on this offense, and it goes much further than just the quarterback, even more than the offensive line. You can call into question the play calling, the creativity of this offense. And with all of these weapons, why are guys not running in open space a lot more with the weapons, with OBJ and with Shepard and Saquon and Ingram? And you've on paper, you're like, this offense should be putting up Ram-like numbers, and it's just not there.
For sure, for sure. You're listening to Locked On Giants. I'm with Patricia Traina and special guest Chris Raggi, CBS News anchor. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and we're going to talk some more about the Giants. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans. We appreciate you listening. As always, you are with Patricia Traina, and joining me today is Chris Raggi, who is the CBS News anchor. You can catch him bright and early in the morning. He's up early looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I don't know how you do it. I mean, I didn't even know there was like a 5 o'clock in the morning. I am not a morning person. So.
Well, then you definitely won't be there for the 4:30 a.m. news we do.
So
the day starts early. It's the alarm goes off at 2. I'm usually backing out of my driveway around 2:45, at the office by 3:15, and on the air at 4:30. But it's for some, they're like, oh my God, how do you do it? I always say, well, you know what? It's a job I got. I love doing what I do for a living. I love the people I work with. So it makes it a lot easier.
For sure.
It's tough, though, when that schedule comes out, though, Pat. Every time I see these Sunday night games or Monday night games, or it's just like, ugh. Well, there's some tickets I have to give away.
But this year it hasn't been so bad because of the losing.
No, the problem is nobody wants to even take the tickets now. I can't pawn them off on anyone.
Oh. Well, Chris, let's kind of brighten it up a little bit, because we've been lamenting, you know, the misfortunes of this team and everything that's wrong. Let's talk about some of what's to like about this team, because certainly amongst the rubble, there are pieces they can build around. You know, offensively, you've got Odell, you've got Sterling Shepard, Will Hernandez, I think we mentioned, Saquon Barkley. Defensively is kind of interesting, because, you know, you kind of thought that they had everything they needed with defense, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. And then Olivier Vernon goes and gets hurt. Eli Apple starts off promising, and he tails off to where he's traded. They trade away Damon Harrison. But you know what? I like some of the talent they have on the defensive side of the ball. I love these two kids that they have, you know, up front, Dalvin Tomlinson and B.J. Hill. And this other kid that they're still waiting to get back, R.J. McIntosh. I've heard a lot of good things about him. In the secondary, Grant Haley had a promising game. Sean Chandler, a promising game. Love Lorenzo Carter. I would love nothing better than to see him and OV team up on the edge. I mean, what are some of your thoughts?
I don't know why. I would hope, you know, I hope he gets more snaps, because that's exactly what I was going to say. I really like him as well, and would love to see him get some more. You know, it's funny. Olivier has just been. He's been an underachiever as a Giant. I think there's not a Giant fan out there that would say that this was worth every dollar we spent. I mean, I know injuries play a role, but in true Giant fashion, this guy doesn't miss a game his entire career until he comes over here, puts on the blue, and, you know, it feels like we've barely seen him out there, to the point where he's that impact, you know, guy on the outside. He just, you know, let's call a spade, and that just hasn't been that way. The defense – I know a lot of people were a little, felt a little disenchanted when they gave snacks away for what I think a lot of people reading and seeing what I saw felt they could have gotten more for him. But I mean, as you just mentioned, they've got three guys up front that they like a lot. He was probably not going to be around next season, so you try to get what you can. I'm glad there wasn't a wholesale fire sale at the trade deadline. I'm glad that Landon Collins was not dealt. As you mentioned, if you're going to do a complete rebuild, I get that, but you still have to have some pieces in place. And I think there is not a Giant fan out there that would say we are better off without 21 on the back end.
Oh, so. I definitely agree. But you know what? I was surprised that they didn't move Janoris Jenkins, because, you know, next year he's going to count for, I think, $13 million against the cap.
Yeah.
He hasn't played well this year. I mean, for whatever reason, he hasn't played well. He hasn't come close to matching his Pro Bowl form in 2016. And I just don't know how you justify keeping him next year.
Was the offer just not that was even remotely good, not there? I mean, I guess you can't give a guy away if no one's offering anything in return. Was the interest? I mean, I know there was rumored interest, but I mean, when push came to shove at the deadline, I guess no call really came in that was even worthy of letting him go.
I mean, the only thing that I heard in connection with the trades that weren't made is that Gettleman was very much interested in getting a third round pick for somebody. And as you know, the third round pick this year they spent on Sam Beal, the cornerback in the supplemental draft. And so, you know, he would like to get that. And, you know, I think the way this is shaping up, if we look at how Gettleman drafted last year, I think what the plan is, and this is just my random guess here, is he's accumulating all these lower round draft picks and using them as capital should he want to move around in the top half of the draft. And it's really not a bad strategy if you can pull it off. You know,
so we need body. I mean, I will say this, rather than being able to kind of mix and match and try to move up, I think they need bodies, as we now know. They're going to need as many picks as they can get their hands on to fill this roster. They got a lot. I mean, there's a lot of openings. This doesn't just go to the, hey, we need a quarterback or we need an offensive lineman. There's a lot of positions out there that need to be filled. So he's got his, we're going to actually really see what Dave Gettleman has made up this time around.
For sure.
After this draft next April, because I think with you take into account some of the players that are probably not going to be retained after the season, it's going to be really interesting to see how many available bodies are needed.
When you look at the turnover from last year to this year, and even going back to the 2016 playoff team, I mean, I've never seen such turnover.
Well, and it also goes to, you know, these guys with the new CBA rules, they're not together enough. There's not enough practice time in the off season. I think you talk to any NFL player these days, I mean, training camps are not what they used to be. It takes 5 weeks of the regular season before teams are actually kind of operating on all cylinders. And maybe, I think it's very difficult for a cohesion, you know, to establish any type of identity or cohesion with a lot of these, especially when you have this type of turnover. I mean, what's the one thing you talk to any offensive lineman, what do they talk about? They talk about these guys being a group, being together, knowing what the other guy is thinking. Our offensive line, they barely know, you know, who's next to one another's names at this point, let alone what they're thinking. And we wonder why, yeah, the problems are as glaring as they are. I mean, I hate to keep – it drives me crazy. But, I mean, you watch these guys. I'll go to the game and I'll come back and I'll watch it again, you know, at home afterwards because, obviously I love torture. And you see what's going on out there. And it's just – these are rudimentary things. Rudimentary errors are being made. And it just – it's one breakdown here. It's a lot of times – you'll get maybe Nate Solder will break down two or three times in a game. Will once or twice, somebody on the right side misses this play, misses that play. But, you know, again, if you've got seven or eight breakdowns throughout the course of a game, that's six sacks, two tackles for a loss, or however you want to break it down. That's a lot of negative plays.
Yeah, it sure is. And you know, I just feel like we're stuck in Groundhog Day, you know. It's just it's a repeat of last year and with no hope moving forward because the roster is what it is. But you know, yeah. With that said, Chris, I mean let's try and you know, rather than keep making this a gloom and doom discussion, yeah, here, what are you looking forward to seeing in the second half of the season? A particular player? I mean, what kind of changes are you thinking that they might make that you might be looking forward to seeing?
Well, you know, I think a lot of us say, hey, just put the ball in either 13 or 26 hands. I know it's easier said than done. And I know the narrative is, hey, you know, you got to give Saquon 20 carries because he's going to break carry 17 or 18, or he's going to, you know, break the defense down and he's going to spring that long one. And I would love to see that. In a perfect world, I'd love to see that. Although with the way things have gone, when you're down 14 points or you're down 10 points, and you give it to him two straight times for a loss of two, loss of three. I mean, I know it's tough to kind of, you know, stay in that mindset of just keep feeding them the ball. I would just love to see just a little bit more time for the quarterback. I would just love to see Eli just have a little bit more time out there. So it's not just always a first read. It would just be so nice to be able to look one guy off. And I mean, do you remember back in the Hakeem Nicks? I'm not even going that far back, just the Hakeem Nicks days, okay? Mm-hmm. No team executed the back shoulder fly route than I think the New York Giants did for a period of time.
Yep.
When was the last time Eli had that type of time in the pocket to throw that? To throw, you know, that 20-yard, you know, out. it doesn't exist these days. And you can't run your offense from, you know, 5 to 8 yards constantly. You've got to extend the field. And at this point, the Giants don't threaten anything. They don't threaten – they're not causing the defense to be it the least bit scared or mindful of what could potentially happen if a guy gets over their head, because it's just that there's not enough time for it to happen.
Yeah, I'm telling you, you know, you talk about having to hit rock bottom before you can rise from the ashes. This team is there. And,
but you know, but getting back to your question, I mean, I really like Pat Shurmur. I like the coaching staff. I'd like to see these guys. I don't want this to be similar to last year, where you saw in games guys just didn't give a you know what. And I hope it doesn't come to that. I don't think they're at that stage. I mean, I think these guys, you know, they're smart. They're professionals. They recognize what they've got and the problems that exist right now. I'd like to see them, you know, try to shore things up a little bit so they're at least competitive. I mean, I'm not asking for, you know, an 8-game winning streak. That would be great. I'd love it. But if, you know, again, I'm a realist, I would just like to see them continue to play hard and, represent the blue.
Well, you know, I had Michael Thomas on the podcast a few shows ago, and I asked him, I said, you know, what's one of the differences, you know, why should people think that, you know, the season isn't going to basically, you know, get any worse? And he said, because we've got guys in there that do care. He says, look, you know, we're so close. I make an interception, you know, I catch a ball on an interception, you know, we make that first down, we do this. He says, that's the difference, you know, the plays you make versus the plays you don't make. And he says, right now, we're just not making enough of the plays that we need to make.
They're not. They need something to kind of boost their speed. They need a turnover. They need a big pick. They need a, you know, a fumble recovery, to take it back. When was the last time, you know, we scored a defensive touchdown? I mean, it's like a return, something to spark these guys, because I think we all know, you watch the Giants, they can have, you know, a 40-yard clip, and all of a sudden they get to the line of scrimmage, and it's, you know, the whistle blows, false start, offense, and then they seem to go into this tailspin. The Giants have just never been good at dealing with adversity. I think I'm not telling anybody out there anything they don't know. The Giants have a very difficult time. They can drive them. They can go down the field, score on two consecutive drives. I'm going back years ago when I say that. And then, you know, Eli throws an interception. There's a fumble, something like that. And it just seems to take them another quarter and a half to recoup from a mistake that didn't necessarily result in points for the other team. But they just haven't been resilient from that standpoint. So it would be nice to see everybody just kind of get on the same page. This is, you know, you got all your bodies out there. Last year, injuries were a big, big problem, so you were not expecting anything. The injury bug has not hit them this year. They've got, for the most part, they've got their weapons out there. Let's see these guys go out and do something. I mean, it shouldn't be – it's not rocket science, right?
You know, it's not. I hope you didn't just jinx them, because, I mean, that's the last thing they use with injuries.
I mean, try. If it wasn't for bad luck at this point, they'd have no luck at all. So I don't think anything that I can say is going to do it. But it's just like, you know, hit the guy in front of you, for God's sakes. I mean, if it's that difficult, just, you know, you're lined up, hit the guy in front of you.
All right. On that note, Giant fans, we're going to call it a show. I want to thank Chris Raggi for stopping in. It's always a pleasure to hear from him. Always a pleasure to talk football. And he's right there with us, folks. He's suffering just like the rest of us. Longtime devoted Giant fan, super guy. You can catch him every morning during the week on CBS Channel 2 if you're in the New York area. Does a really, really good job. And you can find him on Twitter at Chris Raggi, RAGGE. Okay, Giant fans, we're going to call it a show. I want to thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week when we will wrap up the Giant 49er game. We'll have some more guests. We'll have our crossover show for the next game. A lot more coming up. Appreciate you, and have a good weekend.